Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capital Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning there, Marky.
Hey, Francis. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm sort of single-mindedly focused these days.
Focused?
Yeah.
Focused.
I'm focused on the
food, wine, restaurants.
One of the finer things in life on cocktails because we've been working a lot on our cocktail list, which we're just
every day. We're just plugging away at this every day to make it perfect.
And it's amazing. We're working with the chef. We're working with a maitre d' upstairs, and we're spending hours and hours and hours on. And we'll make 25 versions of individual cocktails.
Well, I think one of the cool concepts of, and we talked a little bit about this the other day, the cool concept of this whole cocktail program is our chef is going to spend an hour a day behind our bars from 5 to 6 from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I think that's a really cool idea. He's really into it. And when you talk about a bar chef, we're really going to have the chef behind the bar.
We have the executive chef behind the bar. I think that bartenders are going to have to learn how to be like a yes chef. It's a different environment in the behind the bar than employees are used to in the kitchen. But one of the drinks that we came up with yesterday, we actually pretty much shamelessly copied it from our friend Dale DeGroff and his great cookbook, his great cocktail book, The Craft of the Cocktail.
It's not shameless if we give him credit.
Yeah, I'm doing it on the air. I said it really loud. I said it on the air on the radio.
Do me a favor.
I know, no singing.
Leave the Donna Summer.
Talk radio.
To Donna Summer.
Here's the deal. We did this coffee martini, and I am loath to call, and so is Dale, and so are the people. Call anything, if you think if they put anything in that shape of glass, it becomes a martini. It doesn't, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the basic martini is gin or vodka, vermouth. That's a martini.
Right.
There are other things are cocktails, but this, because it's mostly vodka.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's close enough to be called a martini, and
right. If you're making a martini and you're flavoring it with something other than vermouth and choosing that as a medium, you can still call it a martini.
It's a borderline call, but in any event, it's got a sugared rim too. So, there are a lot of versions of the coffee martini out there, and we made an amazing one. I think
really amazing.
We have an espresso machine behind the bar, so it's an espresso martini made with real espresso and a sugared rim. And let me tell you something, it's a martini. And an espresso, a full espresso in there.
Mm-hmm.
So we were experimenting with them. I probably imbibed one or two of them.
It's like the Red Bull of cocktails.
I was a little hopped up and a little drunk. No, I wasn't really drunk, but it was unusual. I mean, I see why people drink these things. It's, you know, keep your Red Bull, but it was the full on caffeine and a martini. It was very unusual feeling. Very, very unusual feeling.
You're going to be all right?
I'm not going to order those. I'll make them, but I'm not going to. They're delicious.
With these cocktails and with
I literally thought, why do I feel so funny? I feel
not,
funny.
Trust me, you're not that funny. with these great cocktails, one of the things that people realize when you get these cocktails, and I think sometimes they don't realize it right away when someone's making them a cocktail, but great cocktails take time. Just like great food takes time. And a cocktail may take a bartender 2 or 3 minutes to make. And if you've ordered 4 or 5 different cocktails, a great bartender may take 10 or 15 minutes to get you your cocktails.
But if you're making like disco cocktails, like out of a gun and out of a can and out of a bottle and apple pucker.
Bartender can make 12 cocktails an hour, a minute.
Right.
But a real cocktail can take a minute or 2 minutes or sometimes 3 minutes to make one of these
real
cocktails.
If you want to put an egg white in it and muddle the mint and make an espresso,
if you see your bartender sifting yolks out of your eggs, you know that he's making a real cocktail, and you know that it's going to take some time.
Well, let's go back to the coffee martini for a minute. We have a related story here in the news. Entrepreneur Hobie Buppert poor fellow probably got a lot of ribbing in grammar school.
He's getting some right now.
He pushed. He doesn't care because he's rich. He pushed his new energy drink, Balls, B-A-W-S, to computer gaming enthusiasts who found the caffeine juice drink was the perfect stimulant to pull all-night gaming on their PCs. Their slavish devotion propelled Bubbert's Miami company to unforeseen heights, and the Miami-based shipper moved 20 million blue bottles in 2005. Now he's targeting another niche, American soldiers abroad. While some of his devoted customers are serving the armed forces, and with all soldiers needing to stay awake through extended periods of time, Bubbert has created Ball's Military Pack. He's sending it over to the military for sale.
Let me tell you something. Okay? You want to take one of these so you can stay up all night playing on your PlayStation?
You're an idiot.
Loser.
Right.
You want to take one of these? You want to take one of these to protect the camp from enemy fire?
Have a ball.
Okay, go for it. Have a good time. Exactly.
Well, and you know, it's funny because we talk about these energy drinks all the time, and I think they're not a health drink. And his quote, I like this guy because he's pretty honest. He says, their motto is, tastes good, keeps you awake. We aren't a health drink. Okay. All right, then. I'm just talking about martinis. They're not health drinks either.
Unless you're trying to stay awake to protect the camp, then it is a health drink, okay?
Right. If you fall asleep, if someone's going to shoot you, then it's a health drink. We talk all the time about how we think that these energy drinks are really, they're bad for adults, they're really bad for kids, and they should be out of the schools. For soldiers on active duty, have them if you like.
Right.
That's where we stand on that one. All right, more news. This is from the BBC. That's the British Broadcasting Company.
Thanks for clearing that up.
Drinking decaffeinated coffee could increase the risk of heart disease, a study has suggested. So one more thing on the margarine instead of butter, bad for you. Skim milk instead of whole milk, bad for you. Now we have decaf coffee could lead to increased risk of heart disease. It could lead to a rise in the harmful cholesterol levels, the U.S. National Institutes of Health study has found. The finding comes as a Danish team reiterated that drinking 8 or more cups of coffee a day while pregnant may double the risk of losing the baby.
Wow.
They advise the pregnant women to drink no more than 3 cups of coffee a day, but they said that if you're going to drink coffee, that caffeinated coffee is better for you than decaf related to heart disease. Isn't that wild?
That is wild. You know, there are antioxidants in coffee, there are antioxidants in tea, and it would appear that the caffeinated versions are better for you than the regular versions. You know what I really want them to do a study on?
What?
Is cake better for you than salad? That's the one I'm hoping comes out soon.
I think the cake's going to lose on that one. Let's not go too far. Now, you know what? But I think what's interesting is I think people are moving more toward whole food.
They're finding the chocolate's good for you.
Yep.
Okay, so we're just one step away. Chocolate cake, then. I want to do a study, chocolate cake versus salad. Let's see what's better.
I'm ignoring you. They found that there are also studies that came out that said that If feeding lab animals, mice and rats, skim milk causes hardening of the artery, mm-hmm. premature hardening of the arteries, whereas mice and rats who drink whole milk don't suffer that same hardening of the arteries. And so drink whole milk, have some butter on your bread, and have a cup of coffee with the caffeine if it doesn't keep you up at night, and relax.
Well, I thought the whole reason you had a cup of coffee was to wake up, not to relax.
You know, it has
Isn't that why you have the decaf?
It has no effect on me. I know a lot of people who can't have a cup of coffee in the afternoon.
Yeah.
I can. I do. It's great.
I find if you work 19 or 20 hours, it really doesn't matter how much caffeine you've had. You can go right to bed.
We're going to have a guest on in a couple of weeks, a gentleman who also proposing that we get away from pasteurizing all milk and go to raw and whole milk, and we'll be talking more about that in future shows. We're going to be talking with Jerry Traunfeld, the author of The Herbal Kitchen, in our next segment. It's a great cookbook based on herbs and based on his experiences at his restaurant called The Herb Farm in Washington State. We'll talk about that in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hey, you're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott from Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Jerry Traunfeld, is executive chef of the Herb Farm in Washington State. Jerry Traunfeld combines his passion for cooking with a love of gardening. In the last decade or so, he's garnered national attention for his innovative multi-course menus at his restaurant and his expertise in the subject of culinary herbs. He's been featured in the New York Times Magazine, Food and Wine, Bon Appetit, Gourmet, Fortune, and lots of other publications. He's been on Martha Stewart Living. And he joins us today to talk about his book, The Herbal Kitchen, Cooking with Fragrance and Flavor. Jerry, welcome to the show.
How are you, Jerry?
I am great. Thanks for having me.
So you wrote a whole book about herbs.
Actually, two books.
This is the second book about herbs. So you wrote a whole book about herbs, and then you did it again.
I mean, I did my first book in, it came out in 2000, and I really felt like there was a strong need for a cookbook that was very comprehensive and really taught home cooks how to use fresh herbs, because it wasn't an ingredient that all of us grew up with. We all grew up with the dried things on the shelf. And all of a sudden, there was this great trend of people growing their own herbs, of all the supermarkets carrying them. And I felt that people were sort of at a loss to what to do with them when they got them home or when they cut them from their garden. So the first book was very comprehensive, and the new book called The Herbal Kitchen is 100 recipes that were selected as kind of things that I would like to cook on my days off from my home herb garden that don't take a lot of time, because that's sort of the premise. Yeah.
This book is not. It's a combination, a really unusual combination, and I find that the cookbooks that I like the best are the ones that are a combination, and yours has got a little bit of lifestyle in it. It's part cookbook, and it's certainly a gardening book at the same time, with advice of what to plant, when to plant it, what to look for, how to prune, how to pick. What made you have an idea for that particular combination of things?
Well, I knew that, first of all, the second book, I really wanted to, be highly illustrated, to really draw you in with the photos.
Beautiful, beautiful book.
Yeah, thank you. And, I just think that if you're, going to do a book about cooking with herbs, you're naturally going to want to grow a lot of them. Many of the ones that I talk about, I mean, I try to make all the recipes accessible and always give substitutions for herbs you can buy in the supermarket. But I think what's really exciting is growing all these herbs in your garden that you can't necessarily buy. So I have recipes that include lovage and chervil and rose geranium and all things like that. So if I'm going to put those recipes in the book, I have to tell you how to grow them too. And they're very, very easy to grow in most parts of the country.
When you talk with a home cook, and I think this is very interesting, because there's a big difference between dried herbs and fresh herbs. Mm-hmm. When you see a home cook go wrong with fresh herbs, do you find that it's that they overdo it, or they don't know what complements what, or that they put the wrong combinations together? What are the mistakes that home cooks usually make when cooking with fresh herbs?
Well, I don't think there's that many mistakes that you can make, but I think that it's generally using too little or too much, and just sort of getting a sense of what the right amount is. And it's hard with fresh herbs. It's not like, one teaspoon from a jar. They vary quite a bit in their fragrance, mm-hmm. and whether, when you chop them and measure them, it depends on whether you press them down or not. So you have to kind of get a little bit of a feel for it. But generally, the one rule is, and it's just like with wine pairing, you kind of match the body of the dish with the strength of the herb. So, you don't, a really strong herb like rosemary, you don't use a lot of with a very delicate food like, say, halibut or something. And on the other hand, some of these herbs you can actually be pretty generous with, things like chervil or basil or marjoram. You can use more than I always see these cooking these recipes in cooking magazines where it's like a teaspoon of chopped marjoram in a recipe for six. And to me, I don't think that's enough. I really like to be a little more liberal. Yeah.
I find that most times when people are using herbs that I see, they're underdoing it.
Yeah,
right.
Well, I come from a long line of terrible cooks, and if it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing. And, it's funny you talk about rosemary, but like rosemary and thyme, when people overdo those things, you go like, well, this dish is lovely. It's like eating a Christmas tree.
Right. There's a few, and also sage that can be kind of medicinal if you use too much.
Yeah, it's medicinal, or it starts to take like your grandmother's purse. But the book is great. It's actually, you could function as a coffee table book, but it also works to give you some ideas. I think a lot of people go into supermarkets and they see herbs that are available, or they want to grow them in their backyard, and they don't know quite what to do them, and they're a little intimidated by them. And in your book, you cover everything to use herbs from hors d'oeuvres to cocktails to in with dinner. What gave you the idea for using herbs in cocktails?
Oh, it's not my idea. I think it's a big trend around the country.
Sure.
You go to a lot of trendy bars and restaurants, and they all have recipes made with basil and sage
right,
and
the basil
lemon
mojito
verbena.
Has become very popular in this area.
Right, so, you know, it's a great thing to do at home, too. You have these things in your backyard. It just, like, really ties in with, you know, entertaining in the summertime. And it gives you a lot, just kind of a twist, and it actually tastes really good with a lot of, in a lot of drinks, alcoholic and non-alcoholic. But a lot of alcoholic drinks, you know, have sort of botanical ingredients anyway, like gin.
Well, especially gin. Hey, our guest is Jerry Traunfeld. He's the author of The Herbal Kitchen, Cooking with Fragrance and Flavor. He's also the author of The Herb Farm Cookbook, an executive chef at the Herb Farm restaurant in Washington. We'll be talking more with him about fresh herbs and how you can use them at home in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25. You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term, good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government, it's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. Jerry Traunfeld is the author of The Herbal Kitchen, Cooking with Fragrance and Flavor, a beautiful new book about herbs.
Now, Jerry, one of my favorite parts about the book are early on, you give kind of an outline of the things you can plant and what you can expect from those plantings. Mm-hmm. How do you choose exactly what goes in your herb garden?
Oh, I have one of everything, or more than one of everything.
Okay, if you're not Jerry Traunfeld, how do you choose what goes in your herb garden?
I'm sorry, how do I choose?
I guess it depends, you know, what part of the country you're living in. Like here, we can grow a few herbs that do really well through our winters, like mm-hmm. rosemary and bay. And in your part of the country, you probably have to take them inside in the winter. So, those would be sort of optional, but I'd start with the basics. I'd start with thyme, tarragon, sage, marjoram, mint, mm-hmm. and basil. Those would be my first.
Does the home cook really benefit from having those growing in the backyard as opposed to going to the supermarket to get them?
Oh, sure. You know, why pay? Now in my area, it's $2.49 for about three little scrawny sprigs in the supermarket. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for that price, you can buy a plant in the nursery, plant it in your garden. In a few months, it'll be a big plant, and you'll have pretty much an endless supply of all the herbs you need for the summer, and some of them are perennial, so mm-hmm. some of them for years.
I think one of the things that I really like about having an herb garden, and I plant one myself every year at home, is exactly that, is that you have these very fresh herbs. They don't take up very much space mm-hmm. Unless you plant mint and it starts to take over the whole place. Mm-hmm. But besides that, they don't take up very much space, and they're easy to use. For me, I am not afraid. You know, I replant every year. Mm-hmm. Rather than try and bring them in, I know that they're going to last 6, 7, 8 months, and a few of them, which my aunt, who is the person who got me into planting herbs, would say are loyal, and they will return year after year.
Right.
But for most of them, I just replant them and start from scratch every year.
And frankly,
small investment.
I don't care about the $2 for this scrawny sprig,
right.
But when I'm cooking, if I have an herb garden mm-hmm. in the backyard, you know, I don't want to have to think, what am I going to cook tonight? I need to go to the store and get some rosemary, you know?
Uh-huh.
I think that for the suburban cook around here, the urban cook around here with your window box, mm-hmm. the idea of having all those herbs fresh all the time is they're there when you want them, and you can sort of cook and say, you know, this could use a little rosemary. Snip, snip, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
And that
right.
really brings, I think, your home cooked dishes out in ways that other people who aren't doing that don't realize. Our guest is Jerry Traunfeld. He's the author of The Herbal Kitchen. We'll be talking more with him after the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Our guest today is Jerry Traunfeld. He's the author of a couple of books. He's written the Herb Farm Cookbook. He's the executive chef of a restaurant in Washington State by the same name, the Herb Farm. And his new book is called The Herbal Kitchen, Cooking with Fragrance and Flavor. And it's actually, it's a beautiful book, and it's a beautiful, visually a beautiful book, but it's also... it's very useful, and I think one of the reasons that it's very useful is there are 100 recipes in this book, but it seems as though those recipes, to me, and this is a question, Jerry, it seems as though those were sort of picked to be representative of the various ways in which you can use different herbs, and so that if you're sort of an okay cook at home, you can see how you put them together in these dishes and sort of extrapolate that to how, you know, how to use them overall. Was that your intention in the book?
Well, ideally, that would be great. I mean, I think my intention was really to just have a collection of recipes that were very simple. You could just look at it and say, oh, I can do that, and you didn't have to spend an hour studying the recipe before you, started doing it and had ingredients that were accessible. But I think I did try to, what I did with about half the recipes was take things that I do in my restaurant that might be much more complicated or presented a little bit, in a more elaborate way, and kind of translate them and say, well, if I was just doing this at home and I didn't have a lot of time, how could I get that same flavor using the same techniques from my garden? And then the other half is things that I just like to cook at home. So I even have like a lasagna made with no-bake noodles, which, takes no time at all, and I have deviled eggs and things like that, just things that are fun every day, but are really enlivened by the fresh herbs. And I do hope that I, show people a lot of the different techniques, whether it's grilling or infusing or steaming with the herbs, and then you can really learn. And the fun thing is when you get confident to do things on your own.
I think people sometimes don't realize how much flavor the appropriate herbs in a dish can add, and how much complexity and how much depth, and obviously no calories. And it's a very healthful way of eating, but it's also a really interesting way of eating. And chefs have been, hiding those little herbs in dishes for years and years and years now.
But, what's funny is, Mark, your family would cook with fresh herbs.
All the
time.
Your
aunt cooks with fresh herbs all the time. And what's amazing to me is you go over to your aunt's house, and she says, oh, you stop by, let me whip you up something for dinner. Snip, 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 boil, 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 saute, 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 and I've got something amazing in front of me in 2 minutes. And I'm always amazed when these processed foods are marketed as, well, the reason you should have this is it's fast and easy, and, a rock star endorses it. I just think it's important that when you use herbs like this, you can make exciting food, and it doesn't have to be a long and involved process.
And my aunt doesn't even have knife skills. She goes out with a pair of scissors, cuts up her herbs. She's done in 2 minutes, drops it in the pan with whatever else she's cooking, squeezes a tomato, and she's created a sauce in moments
that's perfect.
Garden.
That's what I really like to encourage people, is to be real casual with the herbs. It's not a matter of, having to chop everything really super fine. Just take some scissors and clip them right into your food. And, it's actually, you get a lot more out of the herbs. I think you can see them. They keep their character. Sometimes when you chop them really fine, they kind of lose all their essential oils. And don't work as well.
Hey, one of the favorite things that we like to cook with, now that spring's coming up, we get all excited, is we love to use blossoms. Various types of blossoms from plants. Can you talk about that a little bit? Can you talk to us about using blossoms from different herbs and how they differ from using the plant itself, and what the choices are you make as a gardener and as a cook when you use a blossom from something as opposed to using the herb itself?
Sure, and that's the really fun thing about growing herbs yourself is it's not only the varieties of herbs that you can grow, but the different parts of the plant that you suddenly can use that you wouldn't see in the market.
Yeah, I usually get into the blossoms right after I've neglected my herbs for about a week.
Right, and so all herbs bloom, and many of the blooms have wonderful flavor. They're all edible. And some of my favorites, my absolute favorite is sage. Sage flowers are amazing. They're beautiful blue or kind of a violet flower, and they have this sweet fragrance. They still smell a bit like sage, but they just have this wonderful fragrance, and they're very delicate, and you kind of sprinkle them over pastas or over salads or over eggs.
How do you find that, that blossoms differ from the plant usually? Like chive blossoms have a very distinct flavor from chive. Same in the same family, but the blossom itself is very different from chive. What makes a blossom so different, or how do you find blossoms differ from the regular herb?
Well, it's the flavor is just sometimes a little different. They usually have a similarity. For instance, with chives, I think the flavor of the flower is quite a bit stronger than the leaf.
Yeah.
So, you know, and the one thing I always tell people, sometimes you'll see in a restaurant or something where you'll just take an entire chive flower and put it on a plate as a garnish. But that's not really the way you want to do it, because you wouldn't want to eat that at once. You do is break it apart into little florets.
Yeah.
And then
every time a chef does that to me, I pick the chive blossom up off the plate, and I do exactly what you're saying. Take all those little florets off and kind of sprinkle them over the top of my salad.
I think we need to bring the audience in on this one, you geeks. when you have a chive, just in case you're not familiar with it, when a chive blossoms, it looks almost like on the top like a dandelion.
Like a dandelion, exactly.
But each one of the little florets on the end of the dandelion thing that would, if it were a dandelion, you'd blow away. And those have little, basically little flowers that have very strong oniony flavor. And what chefs often do is they take a whole chive blossom and they garnish a soup with it, and that's like putting a whole onion in your mouth. Whereas if you break those things apart, like as if it were a dandelion, and sprinkle them on the plate, it's very beautiful little pockets of intense oniony flavor. Mm-hmm. That's just to bring the rest of the audience in. You guys are having a great conversation on your own there. I thought
and if you grow,
let
if
everybody
you grow,
in the listening area know what you're talking about. Go on.
If you do have those flowers, like the best thing to do with them is put them in your scrambled eggs. I think that's a wonderful home dish. And another important thing, we're talking about the flowers, and to bring in a little gardening, the one trick is after your plant flowers, after your herbs plant flower, you really want to cut them back. If you just let the flowers die and the plants keep growing, they'll tend to get really lanky. So if you are pretty ruthless, cut the whole plant back by about a third to under where those flowers are, then it'll grow back bushy. And that's a rule with almost all these herb plants.
You know, I think that's another really valuable thing about this book, because it's both a cookbook and a gardening book. And, you know, it's not a real in-depth gardening book, but it gives you I've seen people, a lot of our friends like to keep basil, because we cook a lot of Italian food around here, most people at home, even if you're not Italian in New Jersey, cook Italian food. And to have basil in your backyard is wonderful, but I see people who don't know how to manage their basil plants all the time, and even in their kitchen, there's
a
long
stalk
with a leaf, you know, on the top, you know, you have to reach for it, you know, like you need a giraffe to pick it off. And learning how to manage those is another reason to pick up the book. Hey, just so you all know, if you just tuned in, this is Jerry Traunfeld we're talking to at the Restaurant Guys. He's the author of The Herbal Kitchen, Cooking with Fragrance and Flavor, and we're going to put a link up as to how you can pick up that book on our website, restaurantguysradio.com.
You know, Jerry, you just hit on another point a moment ago that I want to go back to. And I think it's a really easy way for people to become sensitized to what their herbs are going to go with. Scrambled eggs are a great vehicle for herbs, and they're a great way to really see the true essence of your herbs and how they're going to react with other foods. And I think they're a great way for people to experiment with their herbs by putting them into scrambled eggs.
What other mediums do you think work like scrambled eggs? Somebody wants to explore an herb, a particular herb.
Sure. I mean, there's just a lot of everyday foods that you can really enliven. So there's something as simple as when you're doing your mixed green salad, or, you know, go to the store and you buy that salad mix, then clip some herbs from your garden. And usually the ones that work in salads, the ones with the softer leaves. So anything like, you know, basil, mint, marjoram, sorrel, all those kind of herbs. And they just add a little, you know, you don't add a huge amount to the salad, but so every once in a while you get a bite that has one of these herbs in it. And it can be a pretty big piece of a leaf, and it's just really delightful. You know, something like, your kids are making a frozen pizza, put some, fresh marjoram or oregano on it, you know.
Yep.
Tell them you're doing it. You have to sneak that in on your kids. I know how to get kids to eat stuff.
Okay.
Absolutely, and I think that
we learned how you grew up.
To work something into a salad, I grew up with a lot of boiled Irish food is what I grew up with. But if you work herbs like this into a salad, it's amazing how they really make, like you said, even if you buy the pre-washed greens, you can really make things pop. We're talking with Jerry Traunfeld. His book is called The Herbal Kitchen, Cooking with Fragrance and Flavor, and we'll be talking more with him about herbs and how you can plant your garden for the spring coming up and cook with those herbs once you get them. In just a moment, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi, this is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants, and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to restaurantguysradio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Catherine Lombardi, the Stage Left Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And our guest today is Jerry Schraunfeld. He's the executive chef of The Herb Farm, author of The Herb Farm Cookbook, and his new book called The Herbal Kitchen, which we're talking about today, tells you how to plant an herb garden, perfect timing, and how to use the produce of that herb garden in your cooking, from cocktails to entrees to desserts. Let's talk about desserts. You use herbs, which most people think of as ingredients for savory courses, in sweet things in this cookbook. And that's kind of interesting and to good effect. How do you work with herbs differently when you're using them in dessert?
Well, let's see. Oh, you know, at my restaurant, we do a 9-course dinner with herbs in every course. So over the years, I've been the chef there for 15 years, I've done a lot of experimenting with how to get those herbal flavors into the sweet courses. And it's really exciting because so many herbs are really great partners with different fruits. And so, for instance, when I cook with peaches, you can add lemony herbs, you can add basil, or anise hyssop is a really fun one, which has a really strong, a very sweet anise-like flavor. And so there's all kinds of ways of getting these herbal flavors into the desserts, and one of my favorite is by infusing them. So that means when you're making a really simple custard, like a baked creme brulee, and you want to add an herbal flavor, a really fun one is cinnamon basil, or basil and cinnamon sticks. And so you just take the milk and the cream in the recipe, and you bring it to a boil, and you add those a few sprigs of the herbs to the milk cream mixture, and you take it off the heat and let it steep. So it's the same thing as like making a cup of tea.
So almost making tea in the milk.
Right, instead of water, you're using milk or cream. And then you strain the herb out, and all the essential oils from that herb will be captured in the milk. And you can also use syrup or wine or pretty much any liquid. And then you just go ahead with the recipe, and all of a sudden you can make whatever dessert you were going to do, creme brulee, ice cream, you know, custards, poached fruit, and it has those great herbal flavors.
I saw the chocolate jasmine pot au creme.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Really good.
Well, you know, one of the things we talk a lot about on the show about environmental issues, we talk a lot about health issues, and we talk about great restaurants and cookbooks, like you have a great restaurant and a cookbook. People find that diet foods are very hard to lose weight on because they may satisfy you in bulk, but frankly, they don't taste very good. And you have a hunger for food, but you also have a hunger for a pleasurable experience and to be satisfied with that taste, something tastes good. Herbs, an extensive use of herbs. I mean, and the easy way to get flavor and texture and body into something is with fat. But the other side of the flavor spectrum is to use interesting herbs, and to make something satisfying with herbs costs you no calories, costs you nothing bad. Do you think that people cooking with herbs can cook healthier?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's the whole thing, is that you can get all this great flavor in without having to rely on all the buttercream or
buttercream,
you know,
sugar.
Thing. Right, sugar, exactly. And you just get really vibrant, really satisfying, really delightful flavors into your food really easily, too.
Well, let's talk about the restaurant that you just came from, or that you work in, a place called the Herb Farm. How did that place come about?
It's got a really interesting story. It started actually in the 70s. There was a retirement business by this couple, Bill and Lola,
And we should also let people know that you're in Washington State.
Right, it's near Seattle, so Bill and Lola started this little herb nursery as sort of a retirement business, and it sort of grew and grew. It was a pretty big nursery.
I get it. Herb business grew and grew.
Oh, God.
12 acres. That was unintentional. And in the 80s, their son, Ron, and his wife, Carrie, joined the business, and they diversified it. They added all kinds of things, classes, and a little tiny restaurant in a garage that served lunch three days a week.
Huh.
And it just became really well known. It was really hard to get a reservation there. And
well, sure, it was only a garage
3 days a week.
It was a few tables, but it kept expanding. And from the beginning, we did, even when it was just lunches, it was these six-course lunches with an herb in every course.
Wow.
And using only local Northwest ingredients. And this was back in the mid-80s, so it was sort of a groundbreaking
concept. Right, before its
concept.
Time.
Right. And I became the chef in 1990. We started doing dinners, and it became more and more widely known. And in 97, we had a fire, and we were closed for a few years, and then we reopened in another location.
That's really hard to do.
Yeah, but it worked really well for us. And now instead of being a nursery and all these other things, we're just a restaurant. We have our own two-acre farm where we grow all these herbs and many of our vegetables. We still use only Northwest ingredients. And we do these nine-course dinners. So you sit down at, say, 7 o'clock. You get we wine and dine you for 4.5 hours. And we pair everything with local Northwest wines as well.
That's incredible. Is there any place to stay nearby?
The new restaurant happens to be on the same grounds as a beautiful inn called Willow's Inn. So you can just, after your four-hour dinner with Northwest Wines, you can just walk across the walkway and be in a nice
That
comfy
sounds
bed.
Awesome.
Sounds
we're
like going
we're going to link you from our restaurants our website restaurantguysradio.com. We're going to link you to theherbfarm.com and tell you how to get a hold of this book and how to get in touch with Jerry Traunfeld if you're going out to the Pacific Northwest like we are soon. We're probably going to go and check that place out. Jerry, thanks for coming and talking with us about your book. It's beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being with us today, Jerry.
Thanks.
Take care. He is wonderful, and the book is really great, and it's a great
it's
addition.
It's a really,
to your...
really pretty, pretty book. And when Francis said it could be a coffee table book, it's because the photography in it is really good. But like I said, start using it as a gardening book before you start using it as a.
And remember, herbs feed your soul, and they don't make you fat. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, and we just were talking about herbs, the legal kind, with Jerry Traunfeld, author
that's
of
the
Herbal
Kitchen. That's not Jerry Garcia, that's Jerry Traunfeld.
Right, exactly, yeah, exactly. So we recently put together a cocktail program for Catherine Lombardi, and we have a core list of cocktails that we're rolling out. But we're also going to do seasonal cocktails,
mm-hmm.
and using herbs in cocktails is really amazing. And mint, by the way, they say that if you look back historically at bars, the one fresh thing they always had, this is mm-hmm. before the nadir of the cocktail, which was the 70s when everything was out of a can or a mix, mint. Bartenders always had mint.
Always using mint. And there's a great way to release the flavors of mint. It's called smacking mint.
Spanking.
Or I'm sorry, it's called spanking mint. And you actually...
Ouch. Headphones. Headphones. Could you tell me when you're going to do that next time?
You actually spank the mint before you put it in a drink, and it releases all the esters.
Here's what you do. You take a sprig of mint, right? And you may use it in the drink, but if you want to put it on the top, you put a sprig of mint in your hand.
In
a whole
the palm
sprig,
of your hand.
And then you spank it. Don't do it again, Mark.
Just like that.
And what that does is it crushes a lot of cells of the mint, and it makes the drink and your hand smell like mint.
And releases the oils inside the mint and can really just liven up a drink or where to levels that you didn't think it could.
And you know, playing with herbs is really, and I think this is true with cooking, and it's also, and one of the reasons that herbs work so well with drinks is because they don't change the body or the texture of the drink. Mm. So, for instance, a variation on a mojito. A mojito is a drink that is made with basically mint, right?
Mm-hmm.
A relatively popular way to twist that around is to make a basil mint mojito.
Yep.
We have one of those on our cocktail list. And you just throw a little bit of basil in there. It doesn't change the body. It doesn't mm-hmm. change the texture. But it adds that certain, what is that? you know, sort of a quality to it. And you can do that with foods as well.
And you can put that basil in by infusing it into simple syrup, into a sugar water.
Or you can just muddle it
and put it into the drink. What you want to be careful of is chopping it, putting it into the drink, and now there's all basil in your teeth.
Right. That's
unpleasant.
We all know how bad that looks. Anyway, so we're a big fan. I really recommend picking up this book. It's great because it's a gardening guide, and it's also what to do with the produce of the garden and what you find in your supermarket. I'm in love with it. Anyway, hope you've enjoyed your hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascoe.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12:00.